I wanted to try to communicate with the audience beyond words.
I mean, I'm always fascinated with the phrase, I'm lost for words.
Imagining that perhaps they could actually sense in my sound what I was sensing.
When you're lost for words, then what do you have? A sound for its own sake.
I see sound as I'm making it. I see the shape of the sounds that I'm making.
So, oh, I don't sing. Oh, I sing really badly. Or I sing out of tune. Well, you know, who cares?
It's really thinking of the voice as a sound-producing mechanism.
Own the sound. Own the sound that you are making. I surprise myself, really, with what I'm able to do.
No.
Not strictly.
Strictly.
The voice is the instrument.
The voice is the instrument.
The voice is the instrument.
My name's Elaine Michener and I'm a... Sorry. Who am I?
Hi, my name is Joan LaBarbera. I'm a composer, actor, vocalist.
I'm a performer, composer, and movement artist. I think experimental is overused. Exploratory vocalist, I don't know, I don't even think that works. It's just this thing of understanding the sound of your own voice and not being afraid of it. And quite a lot of people are afraid of their own voices.
I use the voice as an instrument. I think of the voice as an instrument. I don't necessarily hear the pitch that I'm about to make because sometimes I'm not even interested in that. I'm interested in the shape and the energy of the sounds that I'm making. What a lot of my technique is about is letting the sounds come out and then I discover them as I hear them.
Most of my work stems from my experience as a vocal artist. So the voice is the instrument. I'm a trained singer, but my background comes from gospel singing and jazz singing and free improvisation and contemporary new music. Other people have paved the way before me, so they are the real trailblazers. People like Jeannie Lee, Kathy Barbarian, Julius Eastman, Diamanda Galas, Joan LaBarbera.
Oh.
I remember the first time that I heard Joan LaBarbera perform live. It was at the ICA. I knew her work from recordings, but hearing her live really left me feeling rather stunned. She delivered a masterclass of how the voice can be explored. She only performed her own compositions, really empowering for me to hear this person who's world-renowned for her interpretations of work by Cage and Feldman, but to hear her own voice and to hear her own compositional voice, the way that she works with the voice as an instrument. And working with sound, working with language. I think it was about 2 hours non-stop. It was really a very transformative experience for me.
I think the influence from conceptual artists was incredibly important for me, because the people I was working with at that time were Steve Reich and Philip Glass, for example, later on with John Cage. But the early years, a lot of our concerts were done in galleries and museums in Europe. I was already investigating the voice as an instrument, and that's what I brought. And I just began exploring, thinking about, well, what can I do with this voice? And then I developed this series of sensory deprivation experiments. I had a piece called Hear What I Feel, where I placed six glass dishes on a little table. I had an assistant, and I said, okay, you're going to choose six different items of some sort to put in the glass dishes. And I said, the only stipulation I have is that they shouldn't crawl and they shouldn't injure me. I went to a separate room for an hour before the performance, and I literally taped my eyes shut with cotton balls and masking tape, and didn't touch anything, and just sat in this room. And then I was led out to the performance space. So I just put my hand forward, and by touching the substances in these glass dishes, I tried to surprise a new sound out of myself. And I wanted to try to communicate with the audience beyond words. Imagining that perhaps they could actually sense and hear in my sound what I was sensing and hearing. That particular piece was a real turning point for me.
I have an older sister who has a learning disability. When we were growing up, her vocabulary was really very basic. And so she'd have a sound, one sound that she would say that meant everything, depending on it. So it changed according to the situation. And it was eh. That's the sound I remember from being young. So eh. So it would be, do you want this? Eh. Don't you want it? Eh. Eh to call me. So eh meant everything. But it was interesting for me as a younger sibling interpreting what eh meant. And I think that really sowed a seed for things that happened many years later. I'm deconstructing text, or I'm working with text in a way where it's not that it's, I'm trying to disintegrate the text or disintegrate the meaning of it. I'm just trying to find another way of expressing the meaning behind the word. For example, words or, okay, in a piece that Christian Marclay made called No, it was amazing to use the cartoon as the basis of how I should find different ways to say no, because each strip of cartoon was taken within a point. No! No! Don't! Don't! No! 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 Wait! No! You've got something where you're saying no and you're a conductor waving a baton, followed by no, a woman with some kind of alien with its hands around her neck. Ah! No, some kind of cartoon character being kicked off the edge of a cliff. And so I'm reading these different no's and I'm expressing these no's in really different ways. And it's no, but no can sound different depending on the context. And that's what it's exploring.
No, I... No! No! I can't! Won't! No! 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 No!
Most of us have voices, and we're listening all the time.
Esprit, distance.
We're getting information all the time through our ears. A lot of that information is being delivered on a voice. You know, it's the first sound. We hear sound when we're in the womb. That's already been proven. And babies recognize their mother's voice from all other voices. And so it is built in.
Aujourd'hui, je pense au premier nuage. Il y aura toujours. Mais aussi au deuxième, celui qui suit.
Well, I enjoy words. I enjoy working with words. I also enjoy mangling words and untangling words and rewording words. For example, in the piece that I'm working on at the moment for Assembly, I'm thinking about waste colonialism, which is a thing, it's a term, but I'm not saying it. I'm not saying those words, so I might work with just the sound of the... So it's... and so forth and so on. But I'm thinking about the word, is the void that I'm looking at, so it's the waste and the void. But at some point I will say the word so people know what it is I'm trying to say. My piece for Assembly is titled These Cost the Earth, and it's looking at the clothes that we donate to charity with all good faith, hoping that it will be bought and, you know, someone else will extend the life of those items we no longer want. But what has been happening and happening for many years now is that most of those items end up on landfill in other parts of the world, which has a devastating impact on the environment. Ends up in landfill, it ends up on washed up on beaches. They look like just dead bodies being washed up. I'm working with two amazing dancers who are working with clothes that have been donated that will go to a proper place, but also just to explore this, the elements of it through movement and with voice. I'm known for the way that I can really trigger different kind of emotions within people, the way I work with my voice. But for Assembly, I wanted to challenge myself further because I'm also interested in the movement and the sound of movement and how the movement affects the voice. And which is why there are two dancers, the wonderful dancers, they're also working with their voice in the piece, and I'm really interested in the sound of the breath and how the breath changes with movement. But I'm also working with the space itself at Somerset House and the Lancaster Room stairwell. Which has an incredible acoustic and the space as another voice.
I do a lot of work with imaginary languages, inventing languages that sound like language, and people often think that they've heard language, but it's not. It's just on this borderline between music and language or text. And it's very much affected if I'm traveling and I'm in a country where I don't really speak the language. I often find that what I do with my imaginary language picks up the kind of melodic information and the speed of the language of the country that I'm in. But I have been firmly convinced that the voice communicates a great deal without language. I have a piece called Aaron. It was inspired by a photograph of a father carrying the coffin of his son, who was a member of the Irish Republican Army and had been on a hunger strike and had died. And I was deeply moved by that photograph. I decided to write a piece about that, about Ireland, about what we think of when we think of Ireland, about the different languages, about the writers. Then I would just go into my imaginary space and think about the little old ladies talking to each other and chattering. That's one kind of a sound. And then the fishermen on, you know, on the beach. Oh. along with this very specific imaginary language that I made up, one syllable at a time. And then it goes into this very rich multiphonic dirge at the end. So when I'm dealing with characters, I really identify in my mind who these characters are, what they look like. When I'm dealing with more abstract sounds and not thinking about characters, then I'm thinking of the shapes that I see in my mind.
Clothes have a voice. They no longer have a body inhabiting them, but it's what those clothes would say. I'm thinking about that and the stories and the narratives and how they feel about being used. And it's about extending the experience of vocal expression through objects, through items that you wouldn't necessarily associate with the voice. So even hearing the clothes fall onto the floor or onto the stairwells, for me, that could be a conversation. Being dragged a lot up the steps or a bag falling down. Those are conversations. That's the voice of those objects speaking and commenting on what's happening or what has happened. I try to use my pieces as ways to give voice to ideas that I think about that I can't find another way to express. So I don't write. I'm not a writer. I'm not a poet. So working in this way allows me to really express ideas and my feelings about aspects of society or what we're doing in a more direct way. It's the only direct way that I have. And it's the only direct way that truly represents me.
Houses in
I think of the stage as sacred space. When I'm in the wings waiting to go on stage, I do my warm-up exercises. I do my breathing into my stomach, which is where we all hold tension and jittery nerves and everything. So I never even dream of walking out on the stage until I'm ready. Once I cross that threshold, I'm in another space. I'm in a space that doesn't exist anywhere else on the planet. It's a very special space, and I'm in a special place inside myself.
Kirk Cousins back to throw on 4th and 18. He's given time. He wants Jefferson. Climbs the ladder. Oh my goodness! Justin Jefferson.
I've been watching a lot of interviews with football players recently, particularly Patrick Mahomes. And the interviewer was asking about, you know, how do you feel when you're in the zone? And it is a fascinating question, because an athlete is very much doing the same thing that a musician is doing. You got to be there. You got to be there 100%, or, you know, bad things are going to happen. And so the idea of super presence, you know, you're not only present, but you're present and aware of being present. But at the same time, you're having fun.
Well, for me, I feel as though I'm channeling ideas or channeling energies. You can't do it at 50%. You have to do it 100%. So whatever it is I'm doing, if I'm improvising with my group, the Rolling Calf, I'm hearing things, we're stimulating each other, we're responding or ignoring. And in fact, actually, when you're performing a piece of music, there isn't time to analyse whilst you're doing it. If you're doing that, there's something seriously wrong.
The trouble of the people on this planet. This planet.
I still think it's surprising if you rock up to a soul event, which I have done, and done this, then, yeah, it's people going to look and stop and stare and think, what's going on? There are stranger sounds in the real world in terms of, like, everyday life, and people make stranger sounds themselves. They just don't realise it. I think what Joan and myself and other singers like us do is that we hone in on these and then we craft them. Which is reminds me of Joan LaBarbera on Sesame Street, which I think is absolutely brilliant. You know, you bring the avant-garde to the everyday and start them young.
F, G, G, H.
Each of us has our own unique voice, which is basically affected by the bone structure of our skull. As a singer, then, one learns to employ these different resonance areas to affect the sound. And so the voice is very much a part of the body of the singer who possesses that voice. But it is really fascinating. What makes us who we are is the collective experience that we have in our lives, everything we've ever come in contact with, and the instrument they are walking around in all the time.
Right now, it's really hard for people to protest. There are laws against protests about raising your voice in objection, raising your voice for awareness. In fact, there's a real push for silencing. So I feel that the voice is vital to push back. The voice is essential in helping to affect positive change. There's a text that I used in a piece where there's a call for us to raise our voices. We need to raise our voices a little more. It's so important to keep that in mind, particularly now.